In the name of God who liberates us. Amen. Jesus is in need of respite. He's been teaching and preaching in the Galilean countryside. He's just fed the 5,000 and got into an argument with the scribes and the Pharisees over what is clean and unclean. He's had this discussion with his disciples, what defiles us? And it seems as though he's just had enough. And so he sets out for the region of Tyre, near the Decapolis. 10 cities of Greek Gentiles. This is in what is modern-day Jordan. And it's not a Jewish area. This is a place where Jesus would have been an outsider. And we don't know who he's going to visit. We don't know whose home that he entered, but we're told that he didn't want to be found. He wanted to be in solitude. And the solitude doesn't last long because the Syrophoenician woman tracks him down and she comes to ask Jesus to heal her daughter, to cast out the demon in her daughter. And she's likely a woman, scholars tell us, of high standing in this society. She probably has more money than Jesus. She's probably in a higher position than Jesus. But we're told that she begs him for help. And Jesus' response is harsh. It's harsh. Let the children be fed first, he says. It isn't fair to make their food be thrown out to the dogs. It's harsh. It's not a no, rather a not yet. As though he's saying, I'm here for the Israelites. I'm not quite ready for you Gentiles. And she responds with this brilliant argument. She says, well, actually, you know, the dogs are under the table. They can catch the crumbs from the children under the table. It's not that she's saying, don't call me a dog, or you didn't honor me, because he didn't honor her. She's saying, what if there is enough to go around? And it changes Jesus. Something shifts. Something in her response opens Jesus up. And we know that something opens Jesus up, not just because he does perform the exorcism, he does heal the child of the unclean spirit, but his entire ministry changes. His mission expands. Until this point, Jesus had been teaching and preaching in a limited area of Jewish territory. But after healing this young girl, he stays there in the region of Tyre. He heads even further out into the Decapolis, and they bring him this mute man who can't speak and he can't hear, and he puts his fingers in his ear and he grabs his tongue and he spits on it and this says, open him up, you know. And he leaves there and he goes and he feeds 4,000 in the area of the Gentiles. Something new has happened out of this exorcism. And it's interesting because Jesus' ministry begins with exorcism. In the first chapter of Mark, we're told that he's baptized, he goes in the wilderness, he's tempted, he calls the disciples, and finally he makes it to Capernaum. And he gets in the synagogue, he has his first platform, and he's about to launch this big ministry, and he's teaching, and everybody's so impressed. And in the back comes this man of an unclean spirit. And he interrupts Jesus. And he says, you're here to hurt us. You're the Holy One of God. And Jesus casts the demon out. That's the beginning of Jesus' ministry. And now here we are with the exorcism of the Syrophoenician child. And the ministry broadens. You see, exorcism in Mark launches something new. Exorcism in Mark leads to an opening, a liberation from the power of death. And in fact, each story in Mark has this element of exorcism and resurrection. It's this loop in that gospel. Something dies, something has to be cast out for something else to be made new. Etty Helsom was a young Dutch Jewish woman in Germany before World War II. She was a lawyer, actually, and very well educated. And she had started journaling early because she was deeply affected by depression. And she said she grew up in a very chaotic family. And so she went to work for this psychiatrist in Amsterdam. And he taught her a lot about love, but he also introduced her to Augustine, the great Christian theologian, and she remained a devout Jew, but she studied Augustine, and she became this deeply spiritual person. And Etty was eventually put into a concentration camp in Westbrock, and because of her past, she was sent to work in the administrative sort of function there in the camp. And what Etty knew was that everyone coming to that camp was then shipped off to Auschwitz to die. And she knew that her time was coming. And despite her situation, she writes that, you know, we grow through our consciousness of death. And she recognized that, and she recognized the inevitability of her death. And because of that, she says, her life became enlarged. So this is a paradox. Acknowledging death allowed her to experience the fullness of life. And it grew her capacity to love. So one day, when an SS officer was yelling at her, she smiled at him. And it made him angry because he thought she was laughing at him. And she smiled at him again, and it continued to escalate. And she wrote that she wasn't laughing at him. What she saw in him was someone who had been so hurt by someone that had loved him. You see, in not fearing his violence, in not fearing her death, she found a greater capacity to see life and a greater capacity to love others. And in her story, I was reminded that, you know, more often than not, most of us are that blind and lame man Jesus opened up. You know, when we face pain and failure and death and brokenness, you can insert whatever word you need, it's easier for us to shut down, to back away from people, to not acknowledge the hard stuff, because we don't want to deal with the pain. We live inward, only experiencing a small portion of life because of that, simply because we don't want to be hurt. And I think it's natural human reaction to pain. We're all that man, including Jesus. In all of his humanity, he experienced this desire to go inward. He was headed away from the safety just so he could be in solitude and be away from the hard stuff. But his divinity, this human need for his ability to conquer death, pulled him back to the fullness of life. See, we don't have that ability. Any notion that we can be made whole through our education or through our own self-enlightenment, that's hopeless. Only something greater than ourselves can liberate us and open us up and create something new. You see, that's the good news of this exorcism and resurrection in Mark. I mean, that's the message. That God is constantly working to destroy the power of death. to destroy whatever it is that keeps us locked up in ourselves, which keeps us from a full life, which inhibits our ability to love others. So at the end of the day, the question then for us is, what in our life needs exercising? What do we need to be liberated from? Are we willing to allow Jesus to open us up? Are we really ready for new life? Amen.